This is a Dharmanet presentation.
I'm sure your skeleton appreciates a bit of attention now and then. Right? Yeah, I mean, they don't, you know, there they go all day, you know, keeping us upright, letting us walk, right? Stopping your brains from spilling out.
The word honeycomb, but...
Right, yeah.
A bit hard to
what? To take?
When you just said it.
Yeah, why is that? Yeah, because you think of skeletons as solid and hard, but actually when you look close, it's a very complex structure, yeah? Yeah. So we've got a lot to be grateful to our skeletons for, huh? And usually we take them for granted. You know, the most we might have a glass of milk and think, oh, there's a bit of calcium, that's all I need. And not just your skeleton, but all these different parts of your body that they carry around every day. Yeah? Skin, flesh, everything. So when we do these kinds of contemplations, you know, we're looking for understanding in Buddhism. We're looking for understanding of impermanence. But also you're looking for a sense of connection. You know, one of the things in the meditation on the what we call the charnel ground contemplations, the meditation on the corpses, is that it always says that you imagine. You imagine a body and then you compare it with your own body. So sometimes this is done as an actual, like you know, you literally go to a charnel ground or something like that and you literally look at a body, right? But actually when it's talked about in the Satipatthana Sutta and in the core places in the early Buddhist texts, it actually describes it as an imaginative exercise, right? So you can physically go there and look at it, but the main meditation is to imagine what is it like. And you look inside your own body. So this, you know, the meditation we did earlier, because it was a very, very kind of short introductory meditation, we focused on looking at that experience of those bones inside yourself. Right? You know, Satipatthana Sutra, it says ajatang bahidang, both internal and external. Right? So you can also contemplate what other people's bones are like. You can do that as a meditation. Sometimes it will happen spontaneously. Right? Sometimes you know, this is what usually happens if somebody's doing this meditation intensively, then sooner or later they'll sort of, you know, like one monk said, he told me he had an experience once. He was doing this meditation and he had to travel to Bangkok and he got on a bus and he sort of suddenly looked around the bus and there it was just all skeletons on the bus. And so you get these strange perceptions happen. Your perception shifts, yeah. And another experience Ajahn Chah talked about in his meditation one time. He was doing walking meditation, and he was just walking, you know, peacefully backwards and forwards. And he'd been doing a lot of his body contemplation, and then gradually he began to sink into his walking path. So he began to just sink further and further down into it until he was up to his waist in the walking path and keep on walking backwards and forwards. And then he began to float up, but he didn't stop when he reached the surface. He kept on going until he reached the top of the trees. All this perception. And then when he reached the top of the trees, he exploded and all his body parts went everywhere. And he could see all his organs and body parts and things hanging off the trees. Yeah. Yeah, and so this is a shift. This is perception, right? This is your when you're meditating, your mind changes, right? You realize that all of these things are constructs in your mind, right? And so one of the things through doing the body contemplations is that, you know, you realize that, what is this I, right? Who am I? And we take this just to be obvious, right? I am me, right? And, you know, you sign your name on a form and people ask, who are you? And you tell them your name, and that's very straightforward. I'm me and I'm not you. And it's very simple, right? But of course, it's one of these things that the more you start to look at it, the more you realize it's not simple at all. Right? And I'm sure we're all familiar with some of the thought exercises, you know, about like what happens when things are replaced, right? So your cells are dying and getting reborn and all of these things, and there's a kind of a myth that goes around that says that all of the cells in your body are replaced every 7 years. I don't know if there's any biological truth to that, but that's what they say. How much has to be changed while it's still you? Yeah? And this is something that also comes up with technology, isn't it? Yeah? Because we typically find it's okay to replace bits of us or enhance bits of us with bits of technology, right? So, I mean, I'm sitting here. I mean, I'm part human, part machine. Okay? So I have these vision-enhancing devices known as glasses. Yeah? And that means that when I look around the room, I can see people instead of seeing ovals of vague shape, face shape blobs. It's not quite that bad, but anyway. And I've also got false teeth and fillings. Right? So what you're seeing is part human, part machine. Yeah. And most of the people here would be the same, right? Most of the people here are not entirely human. Right? I mean, you think I'm weird, right? Because I've got vision. But, look, you know, I'm looking around, especially if you don't mind me saying, especially the ladies in the audience. I mean, many of you are putting metal things inside your body to make yourself look pretty. Yeah? Earrings and things like that. What's up with that? Technological enhancement. I'm sure there's some blokes with those here as well, but I can't see any. So, whether for aesthetic purposes or medical purposes or whatever, then we think of our body as something malleable. Right? We can change it. How many bits do we change before it's not our body anymore? Right? I mean, I've got glasses on, but what happens if I was to go blind and I could replace them with a purely digital vision thing, right? How many bits can I replace before I'm not me anymore? So the reality is that our bodies are always changing. The thing which we take to be ourselves is always changing. And even here and now, it's not something which is unitary. It's a composite made of many, many different parts. And also that composite of things is not entirely separate from the outside. And this is one of the things which is always emphasized in the Buddhist meditations or the early Buddhist meditations on the body. Right? It's the idea of ajata bahidha, internal and external. So you realize that just as this body is made up of these elements, it has the bones and skeleton and so on, and other people's bodies are the same. And that internal-external contemplation is part of all of the different body contemplations. For example, breath meditation. Right? I mean, breath is just an aspect of your body. Right? It's a bodily process. Inside our body now, we have air. Right? It's being chemically assimilated into our blood and so on and so forth. Right? But the air is also coming in and out, isn't it? Right? We're breathing air from the outside in and from the inside out. So the air which is in the room now, not me, yeah, I breathe it in and then it becomes me. And the air which is in me now, I breathe out, and it becomes not me. Right? And then you breathe that in. Right? So a bit of me becomes you, and a bit of you becomes me. Right? So we thought we were separate people, but by the time we have walked out of this room, right, we will have all assimilated into our bloodstream, yeah, bits and pieces that belong to each other, right? This could create a very complicated legal situation. Right? But isn't it true? And the same thing with our skin, right? It's not just breathing. Right? The breathing is just a sort of special apparatus for doing that, but actually your skin is doing that all the time anyway, right? Your skin is always, you know, the chemicals and liquid and sweat and all of these things coming through the skin, being absorbed in and going out. It's a porous membrane. Right? So what we take to be ourselves is always changing. It's always leaking. Yeah? Giving off energy, right? This is another thing that's exchanging between our environment and ourselves, just energy, right? Heat, cold. So when we do these, the body contemplations are always very, very important with Buddhism. It's one of the paradoxes of Buddhism, because meditation is all about training your mind, okay? But the foundation of the meditation is awareness of your body. Why is that so? Well, mainly because your body is concrete and real and present. Your mind is much more slippery. It's like a phantom. So it's relatively easy to establish your awareness, to establish your mindfulness on something which is somewhat coarse and somewhat solid and somewhat here. That's another great advantage of the body in meditation, is that your body is always present. It's not in the future and the past. Okay, your mind likes to go into the past and the future, yeah, thinking about things, but the physical senses, the five physical senses, are always present, yeah, more or less. So when we are aware of our body, then by default, right, we're aware of the present. Yeah? So this is another one of the very powerful reasons why being aware of your body is very important as a foundation for all Buddhist meditation. So you might have noticed that when I'm teaching, even say, metta meditation, right? So loving kindness meditation is not a body meditation as such, but I always emphasize that when you meditate on metta, loving kindness, kindness itself is an emotion, right? So it's something experienced in your mind, right? But emotions are not purely mental things, are they? Right? Emotions are experienced; they're an embodied experience. Right? We feel them. Our guts get tight. Our shoulders get tense. Our face, we cry or whatever. We have emotional responses felt within our body just as much as within our mind. So when we do the metta meditation, we ground our awareness in the body. Yeah? In fact, one of the things which my teacher, Ajahn Mahachachai, teaches is that one of the ways that we can begin the loving kindness meditation is to begin by doing the contemplation of the skeleton. Okay? So if you think about how we did the skeleton meditation just beforehand, you can actually do that as the introduction to your loving kindness meditation. So you go through your body until you can feel all of those bones very clearly, and then you spread loving kindness to all of those bones. Yeah? So you wish, may all your bones be happy. Yeah? Or just may I be happy or whatever. Yeah? And what that's doing is that's giving you a grounding, it's giving you an anchor for your metta meditation. Stopping it from being too vague and too diffuse. So by doing these kinds of meditations, by giving care and attention to your bones or to your breath or to the other forms of body contemplation, then you are bringing back into awareness dimensions of your life which are often unlived. And this is great. Saying in James Joyce said, began one of his stories, or in one of his stories, he said, Mr. Duffy, lived a short distance from his body. Which pretty much encapsulates most of us in our kind of relation to our body, right? You think about like a Buddha image. Right? Think of the Buddha image. The Buddha always sits, he's a whole, right? He's sitting there, there's like a perfect sense of balance, everything's collected, everything's there. So one of the worst things that people do to Buddha images these days is they chop them off at the head, right? Yeah, so they chop them off at the head and then I guess it's more convenient to sell them that way or something. And so people have Buddha heads here and there. But you know, traditionally you never saw a Buddha head, I don't think, right? I don't think any traditional Buddhist culture you actually ever made Buddha heads, right? It's only a modern thing. It's always the Buddha is whole, right? And you think about what that means. Like if you think most of us today, you know, most of us, you know, myself included, we work at desks during the day, right? So you think about, you know, when you work at a desk, you know, physically you've got, you know, you're sitting there and you've got a piece of wood which cuts your body in half, right? This is the kind of the feng shui of it, right? This wood which is like a blade, right? That's like cutting your body in half. This bottom half of your body, you just completely ignore, right? That just sort of goes anywhere or whatever, yeah? And then you're only concerned with your kind of your head and your hands. If you're working at a computer or whatever you're doing, right? This part of the body thing you're doing. And it's weird, isn't it, right? We've cut ourselves in half because of the way we've chosen to work. Yeah? It's a very different image of your body compared to how the Buddha is. Yeah? So, one of the things we can do with meditation is we can help to reintegrate that. I mean, meditation isn't the only way. You can also do that through yoga and other things as well. But meditation is a great way to actually get in touch with the feeling of your body. What is the experience of it? Yeah. And one of the things that you notice very quickly if you sit meditation for more than a couple of minutes is that your body is usually uncomfortable. Right? And we typically spend a lot of time and effort to make our body comfortable, right? And you think about all of the conditions that have to obtain for your body to be comfortable, right? For example, temperature, right? I mean, we've got a very narrow degree range of temperatures, right? That we can actually be comfortable at, right? And you know, you can deal with it if it's a bit more than that, but after that, you can't deal with it anymore. So there's only a few degrees when you feel comfortable. And then there's the texture and the pressure and the posture and the shape and all of those kinds of things. And even when you do get it comfortable, the most comfortable seat and the right posture and everything, you can't stay there, right? After a few minutes, that's not comfortable anymore. Now, so this is one of the first things that you learn in meditation. Yeah? Your body is inherently uncomfortable. Keeping your body still is inherently uncomfortable. Yeah? Actually, there's no real surprise to that. You know, we're called animals, right? Animals means you're animated. It means you move. Right? So we are designed to move. Right? Our bodies are designed to move. And the kind of normal human activity, I think, really, for most of humanity was, you know, like you think of like hunter-gatherers and so on. And mostly you're kind of walking a sort of slow, sort of gentle pace of walking and so on across the countryside and things. And that's a kind of more normal posture, right? To be walking most of the time rather than sitting most of the time. And I think that's one of the reasons why walking meditation, which is another form of body contemplation, right, is so peaceful. Right? So if by doing walking meditation, you're just bringing your awareness into your body, yeah, awareness of the posture of walking, you realize, oh, actually, that's quite a nice thing to do. It's kind of soothing rhythm. Yeah, when you're doing sitting meditation, you usually have to kind of do some kind of thing like breathing or metta or something to calm yourself down. But with walking meditation, just the walking is enough. Yeah, you don't really you can do other meditations if you want to, but actually just walking backwards and forwards peacefully, being aware of that, that's already quite soothing. Yeah, I think that part of the reason is because I think that's what our body's more designed to do, yeah? Is to do that. Yeah? But when we come to do the sitting meditation, because we're restless and because our bodies have these different energies and so on in them, and then we sit there and we're fidgeting and we're not still. Gradually, as the meditation goes on, it settles down, yeah, and then the anapanasati says, kapasambhayam kaya sankaram, is the stilling of the bodily activities or the bodily energies. And so this is what happens through the course of that meditation. And so it's not so, something you can push or force, but it's something that comes through happiness and contentment. And so whatever kind of meditation that you're doing, you need to learn to be happy with it. Now, I've talked to a few people about doing the bones contemplation, and a few people said that it was kind of weirdly enjoyable, right? Not everybody. Some people have very strong negative reactions, right? It feels quite unpleasant. Right? But it's weird, right? It's like it can actually be quite fun and quite interesting, and you go through it, and then you realize, oh, your mind's peaceful. Because your mind's drawn to it and it becomes peaceful. It almost becomes peaceful without you noticing. So these different body contemplation meditations, of course, in the Satipatthana Sutta, it mentions a whole range of them, right? In the Pali version, there's the breath meditation, the postures, activities during the day, contemplation of the elements, which I haven't really talked about today, and also the charnel ground contemplations. And in some of the other versions of the Satipatthana Sutta, it also mentions some other kinds of meditations that you can do. For example, the contemplation of food. It's mentioned in passing in the Pali version of that, but in more detail in others. So meditating on food and other ones as well that come in sometimes. So all of these meditations have, you know, they're all different meditations and they have a different purpose, but they have a common theme of grounding your awareness in your body. So it's always a good idea to do at least some of these, even if you don't know how to do all of them. With the contemplation on the skeleton and the bones, as we did before. Oh, I missed one before, was the contemplation of the parts of the body. I thought there was one missing. The 31 parts of the body. So the contemplation of the corpse, which is one of the aspects of it, one small aspect of it that we did before, actually, in the Satipatthana Sutta has 9 different contemplations, and it goes through different stages. So you see the corpse when it's freshly there, and then when it's kind of bloated and livid, and then it's festering, and then when all the maggots come and they're breeding in it, and then all the dogs come and they eat it, and then it decays, and then it's scattered to the wind, and then it falls, and eventually it all just goes back to nothing. Yeah. And so you go through all of those changes, right? And you can see that the changes that the corpse goes through, right? They lead you through an emotional progression as well, right? Because when the corpse first dies and it's there, it's kind of just nothing much, right? And you see just an ordinary dead body. It just looks like someone's asleep. There's nothing much to it. And then gradually you see it, you know, rotting and decaying, and it becomes, is there anything more repulsive? Than a rotting human corpse. It's hard to imagine anything more repulsive than that. Yeah. Should I tell you a story about something that's more repulsive than that? No. It came to my mind when I was thinking about that. Is there anything more repulsive than that? Oh, maybe there is. Well, no, I had a friend I used to play music with before I was a monk. And he told me a story once. He was on a holiday with his mates, and they came to an inlet, like a bay. And in the bay there was a big tall tree with a rope on it, right? And so the kids used to swing up on the rope and then dive into the water, right? It was kind of fairly deep, flat bay. And so they did that. And he did it once, and he got up on the tree and he's swinging up the rope and way over the water and then came down. And when he came down into the water, he was just like, he's just like he landed in hell. He couldn't, what was this? It was this thing. He was surrounded by slime and muck and this putrid, revolting stench and smell. And he's like, and so he sort of got, sort of swum out of it, pulled himself out and swum out. And then they realized it was the rotting corpse of a whale. Oh, dives into. Yeah, that was pretty bad. So maybe there is something worse than the rotting human corpse. But anyway, that was all a bit silly, unnecessary. Anyway, so you go through that stage, that kind of, and it's pretty awful, right? And you go through that, and the bloating up, and the skin turning purple, and the festering, and then the maggots coming. And see, all of this is part of, you know, I was talking before, for example, like, you know, the breath. You know, the breath is in your body and so on, but that energy of the breath, when you die, you stop breathing, right? But the breath ended, but you kind of blow up, right? So that air is still inside you, the gas is still being produced, that element of the air is still there, right? And then the maggots are coming and they're feeding on you, and again, this is you're part of that cycle, right? And we think that we're individual. I mean, this is something, again, which has been shown in modern biology. And it's quite stunning. I read a year or two ago that this article was saying that we actually have more non-human DNA in us than we have human DNA. Right? Yeah. So we think we're humans. We have this DNA. Most of us, most of our DNA that's actually in our bodies is non-human. Right? We have so many bacteria and all of these kinds of things that are living in us. And they're not, of course, we think of germs as being things that cause diseases, but actually most of the time, most of these bacteria are just benign or helpful, right? Only occasionally they get out of balance and they become harmful. So our bodies right here and now are not our own. Just as we are living as a small element within a greater environment, yeah? And so all of the worms and bacteria and germs and all of those things have our body as their home. And so all of these things is, it's just breaking, everything's just dissolving. And then it comes back and it just becomes bone. All of the flesh, all of the water, everything disappears. Skin and bone, and then the skin rots away and it just becomes skeletons. And you know, we think of a skeleton as being something that's hard and lasting. You know, skeletons can be hundreds of years old, even thousands of years old occasionally. But still, even skeletons will decay and they'll fall apart. If you've seen old skeletons, then, you know, they don't have to be that old, but they become quite fragile. They become like dust. And becomes bleached, becomes white and disappears. And then eventually everything is just dust. And you go back into the earth. Yeah. And it becomes quite peaceful. Yeah? You go through all of that, yeah, very kind of dramatic and traumatizing part. But at the end, it's slow and actually quite beautiful and quite peaceful. You know, if you come across an old bleached bone, if you're walking on a path in the forest or something, you don't think, oh, that's disgusting or something. It's actually quite fascinating. There's something quite beautiful about it. And bones are very delicate things. They're incredibly sophisticated construction. Yeah, like all of the parts of your body. So you see that's just gone. And so the course of the meditation itself will take you through some of those difficult places. Don't expect the meditation to be smooth all the time. Yeah? But the goal is that kind of sense of peace. And I was mentioning and just talking about during the break is that sometimes what will happen when you're doing the meditation, you might be moving your body around, moving your mind around, looking at the different parts of your body or whatever, and then sometimes part of your body might start to glow. Right? You might focus on your skull, or it might be just a random bone in your body, maybe a leg bone or a bone in your finger or something like that. Might not be a bone, might be another part. And as you're watching that, it starts to give off a light. Yeah? And it becomes very clear. Yeah? And so all that means is it's a sign that your hindrances are starting to fade. Yeah? Because it's the hindrances in the mind, the five hindrances, which stop our mind from being bright, from being radiant. Right? So the five hindrances, you should all know, sense, desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse and doubt. So when these start to gradually fade when you're doing your meditation, the mind becomes clear and we experience that clarity as a sense of glowing, right? So it looks like that the bone is glowing, but in fact what's happening is your mind is becoming clear and pure. Yeah? So if that happens, then just keep your awareness at that point. Okay? Now, the point where that happens may or may not be intrinsically important. Okay? Sometimes it's important because you might have some particular emotional connection that you have with that part of your body for some reason. Maybe a karmic connection, or maybe some kind of perception or memory. Could be anything, right? And so you might have a particular perception that comes up from a particular part of your body, right? Or it may not have anything to do with that. It might just be an accident, right? That your mind was just becoming calm and it happened to be at that point that you started to notice it, right? So, but in either case, you just stay at that point where you start to see that glowing of that part, and you just keep your mind there as long as it takes. Okay? So don't keep moving your mind around at that point, because your mind is starting to become still, and you might be disturbing it by moving it around. So just let your mind stay with that, and then if your mind's ready, then it can start to go into that, and then that glow and that clarity can become even stronger, and your mind can go into deep meditation from that. And then you can see later on when you meditate another time, if that happens to you, you meditate another time, you can try bringing to mind that same piece, that same part of your body, and then seeing whether that has a similar response. Sometimes you might find that when you go to that same part of your body, that it will also become very bright and very clear. Yeah, and so that, again, that if it does regularly, then that's a sign that you have some connection with that part for whatever reason it might be. And so then that can, you can just meditate on that part from then on. Huh? On the other hand, maybe you find that actually it doesn't, next time you meditate, it doesn't really have any effect. So that just means that, it doesn't really matter. You just keep meditating as normal. But at the end of the day, through this meditation, you can use this meditation either in three ways, okay? First way is just as a general contemplation. So it's like a wisdom meditation. You just use it for reflection and for giving yourself for as a way of internalizing the Buddha's teachings, understanding impermanence, not self, and all of those things that I've been talking about. The second way you can use the meditation is as a preparation for other meditations, right? So you can use it to say, I'm going to do the contemplation of a skeleton until my mind feels clear with that, and then I'll spread metta through that skeleton. Or whatever other meditation you're doing. So you use it in conjunction with other meditations. And the third way that you can use it is as a means to samadhi, a means to deep concentration. So if you're doing it, if you want to do it in that third way, then the main thing is to take your time, okay? Spend as much time with it as you like and as you need. Generally speaking, it's good to combine these kinds of meditations with other meditations, so you're not doing exclusively this kind of body or channel ground meditation. You do it from time to time. It can be very powerful, and it can have strong emotional effects, okay? So you have to look for that and see whether that's happening to you. There's a very famous passage in the suttas, actually in the Vinaya, where it talks about when the monks started to kill each other. Do you know that story? No?
Kill themselves?
No, they started to kill both. Yeah. So the Buddha gave an instruction on body contemplation, said, monks, do this body contemplation, and then now I'm going to go away on retreat. So he went away on retreat. And then it's a very, very strange story. Why the story is in the Vinaya, I do not know. But anyway, and then the monks started doing this meditation. They say, "I was thinking, oh, this body is worthless. This body is rubbish. You know, let's free ourselves from this body so we can cross over to the far shore." So they began taking their own lives, and then they found a monastery attendant. Someone used to hang around the monastery, and he began to perform the services for the monks. And on one day, he would send over 20 or 30 monks would be sent over to the far shore, and then. The best part about this story is when the Buddha came off retreat. And, because of course the Buddha's just out there having a nice meditation while all this is happening, right? Okay? Nobody says, you know, do you think we might go and see the Buddha? Or no, better not. He's on retreat. Anyway, the Buddha comes off retreat and has a classic dialogue with Venerable Ananda, and he says to Ananda, "Ananda, the Sangha seems strangely depleted." And Ananda says, "It would be good, Bhante, if you would teach another kind of meditation to the monks." It's a completely deadpan kind of thing, right? So he says, okay, so he called the monks together and he taught them breath meditation. And he said, this is breath meditation. This is a calm and peaceful abiding, yeah? So how are we supposed to interpret that story historically is a kind of discussion for another time, but the moral of the story is clear enough, right? So those kinds of meditations can become imbalanced, right? And even people who experience meditators or whatever, you should do it, you know, remember that breath meditation is the principle of life, right? So you're contemplating life. So you don't just contemplate death, but you also contemplate life as well, yeah? And loving-kindness meditation, yeah? So a very positive and uplifting meditation. So you do those in conjunction and do some of the contemplations of death and those more challenging ones from time to time. Now, if when you're doing those, you find that you have a strong emotional or physical reaction to them, okay? And this may well happen then. Don't worry too much about it. It just means the meditation's starting to work, okay? So if you can, you just stick with it and you go through that reaction and you be painful and you do that as long as it takes, okay? But at the same time, what you need to do is to reflect and see, well, what actual effect is it having on my emotional state, okay? So you might go through, you know, the period of feeling great trauma or great fear or some kind of physical response or something like that. It might feel very unpleasant, but what does it feel like afterwards? Okay? And if afterwards you just feel, I'm depressed and despairing and I want to send my body away so I can cross over to the far shore, then that's probably a sign that you should stop that meditation for now, okay? But if you're feeling peaceful and calm, right? You feel like you've gone through a storm and you come to the calm waters, then it's a sign, oh, okay, it's just the course of the meditation, you know? It's just like that corpse of becoming bloated and festering, and then after a while it becomes peaceful. And so that's how this meditation goes. So it can be a challenging one, it can be a difficult one. It's probably not one to start with when you're starting meditation, but if you've got a bit of experience in meditation, a bit of grounding on breath meditation and loving-kindness meditation, then it's a good one to do to round out your practice and to sometimes challenge yourself and to perhaps, you know, see some things that may be lying hidden or that you haven't understood in your practice. So anyway, that's just a few reflections on that meditation for you this evening. And I'd like to invite if anyone has any comments or questions.